Sahana Vavatu, Sahanao Bhunaktu, Sahaviryan Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastamavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Page 47. The 14th chapter describes how Chitraketu, by the mercy of devotees, obtained a son whose birth caused happiness and whose death caused distress. In this chapter, Parikshit Maharaj asked his spiritual master, Sukadeva Goswami, how such a demon as Ritrasura could become an exalted devotee. In this connection, the previous life of Ritrasura is discussed. This involves the story of Chitraketu and how he was victimized by lamentation because of the death of his son. Among many millions of living entities, the number of human beings is extremely small. And among human beings who are actually religious, only some are eager to be liberated from material existence. Among many thousands of people who desire relief from material existence, one is freed from the association of unwanted persons or is relieved of material contamination. And among many millions of such liberated persons, one may become a devotee of Lord Narayana. Therefore, such devotees are extremely rare. Since bhakti, devotional service, is not ordinary, Maharaj Pariksit was astonished that an asura could rise to the exalted position of a devotee. Being doubtful, Pariksit Maharaj inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, who then described Ritrasura with reference to his previous birth as Chitraketu, the king of Surasena. Chitraketu, who had no sons, got an opportunity to meet the great sage Angira. When Angira inquired from the king about his welfare, the king expressed his moroseness, and therefore, by the grace of the great sage, the king's first wife, Krita Dyuti, gave birth to a son, who was the cause of both happiness and lamentation. Upon the birth of his son, the king and all the residents of the palace were very happy. The co-wives of Krita Dyuti, however, were envious, and later they administered poison to the child. Chitraketu was overwhelmed by shock at his son's death. Then Narada and Angira went to see him. Shloka Anusharana. Summary of verses. Verses 1 to 7. Parikshit Maharaj inquires how Ritrasura became a devotee. 8 to 31. King Chitraketu aspires to have a son. 32 to 61. King Chitraketu's jubilation and lamentation. Verses 1 to 7. What are these footnotes? Oh, it's in here. King Parikshit inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, O learned Brahmana, demons are generally sinful, being obsessed with the mode of passion and ignorance. How then could Ritrasura have attained such exalted love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana? Footnote 12. In his Bhakti Sandarbha Anucheda 134, Srila Jiva Goswami writes in reference to this verse, devotional service is not dependent on mode of goodness. Brahmajnana is dependent knowledge. Okay. So that's the point. Devotional service is independent, so anybody can actually take up devotional service. But the Brahmajnana are being situated on the transcendental platform, or, you know, as in liberation, or to be able to perform pious activity. That's dependent upon goodness. Right? That's where the mistake comes in. You know, so it's thought that because this takes more qualification, these things are higher, but actually devotional service is the highest point, right? Because it deals with the soul. The others deal with the conditioning. Conditionings have a nature. Therefore, to get that nature to goodness, that may be take some work. So on its own, that conditioning may not have that nature. right? But by devotional service, we can purify. So therefore, the qualities of that nature will remain. Though the purity of the nature will improve. Does this make sense? Let's say someone's a carpenter. It's not that by devotional service he stops being a carpenter. No, then he gets purified, and then on the transcendental platform, he's able to appreciate the Lord, and he's able to perform his duties as a carpenter. Right? Does that make sense? So that won't change. This is where it gets confusing, because we generally don't make the distinction between the soul and matter. Right? Because we identify with matter, we think that the two just go together so nicely. But technically, they actually don't go together very nicely. Right? Knowledge of the Supreme Person is not attained by they who are situated in the three modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. This is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam 6.14.1. Srila Sukadeva Goswami then explained that non-devotees... so that's in this verse here. Srila Sukadeva Goswami then explained that non-devotees can become enlightened by association with Narad Muni. So you're saying Narad Muni's not a great soul here? Because the other one's great saints. This is by the association of great souls. In his reply, he said that Vritrasura in his previous birth associated with Narad Muni and other great devotees. That one attains knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by associating with his devotees is also explained in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.32. Quote, unless they smear upon their bodies the dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, completely freed from material contamination, persons very much inclined towards materialistic life cannot be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, who is glorified for his uncommon activities. Only by becoming Krishna conscious and taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, in this way can one be freed from material contamination. So it's only by devotional service we can be freed from contamination. That's the only way actually people will be uplifted. Right? You can go through some kind of mechanical thing. You can go see a psychiatrist. You can, you know, do all kinds of whatever you like. But it's not necessarily going to get you very far, right? It seems like you're going to do nice because they will encourage you in sense gratification. And so because you become inspired, therefore you feel life is, you know, on the up and up. But in reality, you're still the same, right? Just because you, you know, have a little bit of change this way or that way, you're still materially involved. So only devotional service can take one out of that position. Does this make sense? Yeah. Okay. Anartha is destroyed only by the mercy of a devotee, not by the mode of goodness. Right? Mode of goodness is still an anartha. It's a better anartha. It's a recommended because it's useful. In other words, it's the anartha that can be used nicely in Krishna's service. It's like the body is an anartha, but we can use it in Krishna's service. Right? Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, if you're sick, hard to engage the body in Krishna's service. So if one is in the lower modes, passion and ignorance, harder to engage it in Krishna's service. You understand? So healthy modes basically means goodness. Right? Demigods situated in the mode of goodness and great saints cleansed of the dirt of material enjoyment hardly ever render pure devotional service at the lotus feet of Mukunda. Footnote 13. Srila Jiva Goswami, in reference to this verse, reconfirms, mode of goodness itself will not award devotion. So that's the idea, is that no, but if we do everything very nice, you know, we're kind to each other, you know, fit into society, you know, do all these nice things, then, you know, that will improve devotional service. It won't at all. Right? Does that make sense? Because if we're doing it in a whimsical way, all it's cultivating is the faith in whimsicality. Right? That's all it's doing. We think, oh, well, because, you know, I thought of this and we did that and that seems to get better. So then we just keep speculating. Because the point is we want to develop mode of goodness, develop mode of goodness as is mentioned in the scriptures. That will be beneficial, right? Because the mode of goodness that says, that is something that can be more maintained because it's based on the principle of purity and piety. While the modern, everybody be good and be nice, is not based on goodness. It may look like goodness because the activities of passion and goodness are the same. The difference is, goodness is because that's what you're supposed to do, and passion is, this is what I want to do, right? Because I want the results. So goodness means you're supposed to be nice because you're supposed to be. Passion means I'm nice because I want the result of everybody appreciating that I'm nice. Yes. There's a hidden motive. It may be more hidden or more or less, but in general, yes, hidden motive because, and that hidden may be that the person themselves doesn't even know it. So that's why the Vedic, if we follow the Vedic principles of goodness, then that's something we're supposed to do. That will gain us knowledge and detachment. Then we'll be able to function better. Well, if we don't use that, we use the mode of passion, so we make up our own system of being good and nice. Then the problem is it won't remove passion or ignorance. It won't develop knowledge. It won't develop detachment. So, and passion always ends in misery. Right? It looks good in the beginning, but it immediately changes. Have you ever noticed that there's something comes up, it's the new thing, everybody's fired up about it, it's all in the news, and then after a very short time, you don't hear about it anymore. That's the mode of passion.
And if you do hear about it, then it works?
You see it maintains and all that, then it's generally there, but there's generally no hoop. Nobody makes hoopla about goodness. That's the problem.
Then it becomes kind of normal?
Yeah, it becomes normal. It's just because it's out of the... So they take it... Passion is the, you know, the thing that is great and special. You know, if someone has passion for their work, you know. So it's just that enthusiasm, but you can have that enthusiasm generated on what you want to gain from it, or you can have enthusiasm based on your duties. So one's sustainable and, you know, creates minimal trouble. But the other one... Because people don't know how to get taste, they use the mode of passion to try to generate taste. Well, the Vedic system is no, you use the mode of goodness, then that stableness in that develops taste. Like that, but it's a different taste. So generally those who live in the cities are more into the mode of passion taste. Right? Those who live in the country, it'll be a mixed kind of goodness and ignorance. You know, the place where the living is goodness, they being there is ignorance. So basically, it's, you know... Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you have the cows and then there's who have four legs, and you have a dog who has four legs that herds them around. Then you have an animal with two legs that herds the dog around. Right? You know, so like that. So, yeah. Okay. Therefore, how could Vritrasura have become such a great devotee? In this material world, there are as many living entities as atoms. Among these living entities, a very few are human beings. And among them, few are interested in following religious principles. O best of the Brahmanas, Sukadeva Goswami, out of many persons who follow religious principles, only a few desire liberation from the material world. Among many thousands who desire liberation, one may actually achieve liberation. Giving up material attachment to society, friendship, love, country, home, wife, and children. And among many thousands of such liberated persons, one who can understand the true meaning of liberation is very rare. Right? So, yeah. Okay. In his purport to verse 4, Srila Prabhupada comments. There are four classes of men, namely, karmis, jnanis, yogis, and bhaktas. This statement pertains especially to karmis and jnanis. A karmi tries to be happy within this material world by changing from one body to another. His objective is bodily comfort, either in this planet or in another. When such a person becomes a jnani, however, he aspires for liberation from material bondage. Among many such persons who aspire for liberation, one may actually be liberated during his life. Such a person gives up his attachment for society, friendship, love, country, family, wife, and children. Among many such persons who are in the vanaprastha stage, one may understand the value of becoming a sannyasi, completely accepting the renounced order of life. Your purport. Maharaj Parikit continued. Right, so they're pointing out, Maharaj Parikit is pointing out how rare it is actually to be a devotee. That's the whole point. Because you have, and demons aren't known for, you know, their religious principles and, you know, striving for a liberation and all that. And so even amongst those who strive, very few actually attain it. Those who obtain it, very few actually even understand it. Right? You know, and then come to the platform of devotional service. So how is this demon such a great devotee, not even just a neophyte devotee, because then he and, Indra could have been, posturing over, you know, who's the better, you know, devotee on the social platform or power or, you know, understand like that, but he wasn't. He was just speaking pure devotional service. And you see, when it came to fighting, actually he was technically better than Indra. Because he had to even encourage Indra to actually even fight. So here we see is that the devotee, doing his being situated on the transcendental platform, he can actually perform the material activities and get the results better. Does that make sense? That's the whole thing, because there's this idea, no, if I get too spiritual, then materially it won't work out good. But no, it'd actually be better. So that's the thing. You want the material, you can't work for it so good, and your results aren't great. But you're really attached to whatever, you know, results you got. But if you work on the transcendental platform, your results are better because the endeavor is actually a better quality, but you're not attached to the results. So this is the problem. We want to be totally attached and have fabulous results. But it's either you get fabulous results if you're unattached, or if you're attached, you don't get fabulous results. Right? If you, you know, if you're on the transcendental platform, you have it, you can keep it, but you don't necessarily want it, but you engage it in the Lord's service. But when you want it, even if you get, then you can't keep it, because it's temporary. Right? So once we kind of get over this hurdle, you know, then things pick up.
Right? It means I'm not going to be discouraged?
It means you're doing really good. Maharaj Parikit continued, O great sage, among many millions who are liberated and perfect in knowledge of liberation, one may be a devotee of Lord Narayana or Krishna. Such devotees who are fully peaceful are extremely rare. Footnote 14. In his Priti Sandarbha, Anucheda 35, Srila Jiva Goswami writes, in these verses, Srimad Bhagavatam 6:14-3-5, the word Shreya means persons who are interested in following religious principles, so they will be happy in the next life. Okay, the word Shreya means persons who are interested in following the religious principles, so they will be happy in the next life, are better. And Mucheta means they become liberated even while living in the mature world. So those who don't follow, those who are following are better, even though there's a motive behind it. They just want to enjoy material life. At least they're following the rules. Right? So that's what separates theirs, who follows the rules, who doesn't. Right? So in other words, as soon as you come to the platform, in other words, most living entities are just on the platform of Anamoy. That's it. You know, unlimited living entities. Right? Then of those, very few are human. Of those, then basically very few are sophisticated and they move into pranamoy, and out of that, very few even get up to the platform of dharma. But once you get to dharma, that's better, because at least now you're following the system that could elevate you farther. Right? Because passion ignorance won't elevate you to goodness. But goodness can take you, you know, up. You know what I'm saying? Not to the transcendental platform. It means other than temporarily. It won't bring you to the devotional platform. But will give you the benefits of the higher realms of sense enjoyment and liberation. Right? So that's better. But of that, liberation is better than sense enjoyment. So someone who's endeavoring for liberation is better, someone who's using the mode of goodness for liberation is better than one who's using it for sense gratification. Right? But of those who are endeavoring for liberation, few will actually get that. Then of those who may get, like he says, what is it? Mucheta means they become liberated even while living in the mature world. Of those, that's going to be very rare. And then of those who have those full knowledge and everything are nicely situated, you know, we're talking thousands and millions of those, hardly any become devotees. We see is how they run it. And so they'll run so many of these, very few become this. So many of these, and then it's just showing how rare it is. Then it shows even if you get that, which is so rare, even millions of them, they don't get to the next stage. Right? So it kind of reverses that. So it's pointing out devotees are very rare. So this idea is, oh no, we'll just do something and everyone will just take to it, you know, just popularly. It's like, no. Does that make sense? Yes.
This calculation is not counted with life.
Yes, but is Indra, what's he interested in? Karma, Mr. Bhakti, not even Gyan. Yes, yes. You know, it means the point is devotees, then amongst devotees it's going to be, the point is that, okay, even there's 33 million demigods, right? How many grains of sand in the kid's sandbox? Right? You know, so as many atoms as there is in the universe, there's that many living entities. So 33 million out of a ridiculous number is not a big deal. You know? We're looking at it, it's just so common that that's Prabhupada's potency. That's the potency of this movement. How it's being able to take people that don't even qualify on the, you know, basically just the ones that, you know, they made it out of protozoa, right? You know, like that. And that's your one's qualification, you know. You know, well, why do you think you're qualified? Hey, I'm not a protozoa, you know. Like that. You know, you don't have to worry, I'll be sitting in my chair and then you come back after 15 minutes and I'll need two chairs. You know, so, you know, you understand. So that's the position. And then making such persons, taking them all the way up to here. So this question is actually about us. Yeah. You know, how is it we're devotees? And here it's one Vritrasura is so amazing, let alone a whole movement. Right? And then we take it as so common, and then we think, no, we have to. It's not about the quality of people coming into Krishna consciousness, it's about the volume. Right? Of course, this is the gift of the Ionians. That they made it that it's volume that's important, not quality. Right? Because it's all relative. So it's like, if everybody says it's nice, it's nice. If everybody says it's not nice, it's not nice. So then it's all about volume. It's all about vox populi, which has nothing to do with our philosophy. So the point is we're trying to make quality in quantity. And you only get quality if you actually understand what's going on. You know what I'm saying? If it's about, I have to make minimal adjustment in the lifestyle, where's the surrender? Right? Here, if we look at it. Now, just if we want to be, you know, really tight, so, right? Brutally honest. Okay? Then, except for the guys on the lowest rungs of the social ladder, you know, in the economic system, who gets up early? The lowest guys that have to go out, let's say the garbage men or the street cleaners or some of them, they have to be up early because they have to do all that stuff before everybody else gets up.
Huh?
Big businessmen, they get up because they're smart. They're the other end. But who knows about them, right? Because I guarantee you, when devotees talk about, you know, the mat, they're not talking about them. Okay, so getting up in the Brahma Muhurta is definitely not part of what's going to fit into the Western culture. Okay, Now, how many people immediately brush their teeth when they get up? Or take a bath? Or even change their clothes? You know? Or they, some get up, drink their coffee, sit around, read the paper, then decide to go take their shower. You know, and in the morning there before work, because, you know, work's like, you know, whatever it is, 8, 9 o'clock, what do they read? If they even read at all. But if they read, what do they read? Huh? News. You know, some kind of Gramya Katha. So reading, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in the morning, chanting your japa, taking darshan of the deities. Now, is this something that fits into anybody's in the first world's character and culture? No. Then why are they going to work? Simply to make money for themselves. Right? And you'd have to go up actually quite high in society for them to do philanthropic work. Because I guarantee you, unless you're, you know, really rich, you're not doing any philanthropic work. One individual here or there. But in general, people do not do philanthropic work. They don't spend time down at the soup kitchen or down at the, you know, volunteering here and there. They don't do it. You know, somebody here, somebody there, but generally they're considered a bit, you know, on the edge. Okay? Okay. Eating. Okay, some people may be vegetarian, you know, it's growing in some way, or vegan, like that. But what's their reason for it? It's only health. Or some political reason. But actually, is that you're supposed to be because this is what God said? Right? So they're doing it because they're supposed to, or doing because they want to? You understand? Right? Sleeping. Do they have any rules on sleeping? When they sleep? How much they sleep? No. Mating. You know, according to their theory, whenever it comes along, then take it. Any restrictions? Just like, let's say, according to the modern theory, if you want to have a child, then you have sex as many times as possible as you actually can. Right? So they don't even know the science about the strength of the semen. Right? And then they wonder why so many girls are born.
I've had some devotees complain that it's so difficult to conceive children and it just depends on one.
Yes, but the point is you have better ingredients. Right? You know. They don't understand. It's just like that. So therefore, that's... And then defending, you know, it means they think they're the body, this, that, so anything that... So what is it that we do that is going to fit into modern society? What about our lifestyle, about our philosophy? We're not this body. We're not the controllers. What's going to fit in? Other than there's a supreme. And to discuss there's a supreme, then, you know, that's another thing. And how many people discuss on the platform of supreme? How many preachers use that as a principle? Because actually that's quite an elevated principle philosophically. You understand? So in other words, this whole concept that we'll just fit in does not exist. Doesn't exist. You know, unless the whole idea is that, you know, it's popular, people have become Buddhists. What does that mean? They keep a picture of Buddha around, they light some incense now and again whenever they feel like it. You know, maybe they say a few mantras here and there, now and again sit down and, you know, meditate for 3 minutes on something and then, you know, forget about it for the next, you know, so many days or weeks or months or years. You know, Christians, everybody, you know, you say, ask them, I'm a man on the street, what are you? Okay, Christian. When was the last time you went to church? Right? Do they say prayers before they eat? Prayers before they sleep? You understand? So people just say. So if that's what we want, just everybody to say, nice. But if we want to actually get people to this platform that Ritrasura was on, a pure devotional service, that's going to be rare. Right? Because otherwise, if it's just numbers we're after, there's a small problem. Brahmins and Kshatriyas, it's not about numbers. Vaishyas are comfortable with numbers as long as it's economic. But when it comes to people by volume and numbers, that's for shooters. And one may say, you know, but you know, why are you looking at it in such a base level? But actually, for Malechas, shudras are a step up. So actually, worried about numbers is a step up for one from a Malecha background. So in that way, we'd have to give them the credit, yes. Does that make sense? We would have to give them credit. Okay, they are trying to elevate themselves. They're actually trying to come up into a shudra mentality. Whoopee! So it has to be very, very clear that our mandate is not to fit in. Our mandate is to expose people to Krishna consciousness. Now, if you can do that in a very nice, sophisticated way, like we see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, all our acharyas, Srila Prabhupada, they were able to do it in a sophisticated way. They met people, it worked. If we meet people, it doesn't work. That's not because of the philosophy of the Vedic culture, the lifestyle, or anything like that. It's because of us. If somebody was put off by our interaction, it was because of us, not because of Krishna consciousness. Unless they're, of course, a demon, then that naturally doesn't matter what you are. They're not going to like it. Right? So you don't have to worry about them at this point. Does this make sense? So this whole idea is that, no, we have to change all this. No, we have to change ourselves. That's the point. It's a process of self-realization. But as we were discussing yesterday, something, you know, goes right, you know, then it's us, we did it, and something goes wrong, then we didn't do it, someone else did it. Right? So if my preaching didn't go right, it can't be me, it's got to be the preaching. Right? Sad, but true. So this is the thing, is super, Prakrit Maharaj is so amazed how rare it is to find such a devotee. It's special, it's glorious. That's a glory. Just having volumes and volumes of people who aren't actually interested in devotional service, really, the practice, not really a great glory. You know, people talk about things, you know, like that. You want to do it like that? Hire, you know, how you say? Who are these guys that they do advertising for you? You know. Yeah, you know what I mean. So you just get one of those guys. Have him come up with a campaign. Like I heard, someone was telling me yesterday about a interesting campaign in the negative. Because we're saying, oh, negative campaigns, you know, we can't have all this negative. Negative campaigns can work very well. There was this one place, there was this restaurant was going to open. So before they opened, the what is it called, publicist? Like that? Whatever it is. The advertising firm, they somehow or another went out on the streets. And, you know, whatever, and into the, and put out rumors about the place. Bad rumors about, you know, that the you know, what kind of, you know, unsavory, meat products they were going to be serving. You know, like babies or something, you know, or dogs, or, you know, like that. That kind of, you know, sorry. You know what I'm saying? So like this, so that everybody's talking about it. You know, have you heard about this place? This is disgusting, this and that. But on the opening night, the place was packed. Because everyone wanted to come and see. And when they got there, you know what the amazing thing was?
They didn't see that?
No, it was a vegetarian restaurant. So then obviously they can't think, oh, well, you know, are there, you know, what's in the back, you know? It was a vegetarian. So, you know, guys like this, get them out there, get people talking and all that. But the point is when they walk in the door, if you don't give them the real thing, what's the whole point? What's the point of the endeavor? So that's why, as it is, not how we'd like it. Right? One is sampradayic, right? As it is, and as you like it, that's called Shakespeare. It's a comedy. You understand? It's not real. We can try, sounds good, people laugh, people have fun, but they walk away with nothing. So, yeah.
devotee is very rare.
Yes.
Right. Is that devotee refer to pure devotee?
No, that just refers to a devotee. Then amongst devotees, then you're going to say a pure devotee now is going to be rare. And then a pure devotee, those who have prema, that'll be rare.
Among other devotees, noble devotees.
Yeah, just, you know, right off the street, you know, lives upstairs on the 7th floor. That one, yeah. Why is it devotees always live on the 7th floor? Because in China, the buildings can be seven stories high without an elevator. Right, so elevators are expensive, so most all residential buildings all have 7 floors. And guaranteed, if you're having a program at a devotee's house, it's always on the 7th floor. Guaranteed.
They don't have a
wall. It's small. No, 7. Because 7 is like how many you can walk up without having a heart attack. Right? More than that, you might have a heart attack. So, you know, 7 is all they allow.
Everywhere
else is 5. Huh? No, that's just China. You got to pack them in. I think in Hong Kong, any new residential buildings, they have to be minimum 50 stories.
Singapore also.
Means they have 30-story buildings that are old, they knock them down, put up 50, 50, 60, like that. But they don't. So, you know, come on. You know, they know how to pack them in. So, even we'll give the, The Wallace from Amsterdam, a run for their money for how to pack people in. But they don't have anything on Calcutta. Like that. Okay. If after they attain liberation, such souls do not commit offenses to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they attain the highest, the final liberation. The liberated souls who commit offenses to the Supreme Personality of Godhead are described in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32. Aruhya kricharena param param tata patantyado nadrita yushmad agrayaha. O lotus-eyed one, those who think they are liberated in this life but who are without devotional service to you are of impure intelligence. Although they accept severe austerities and penances to rise to the spiritual position, to impersonal Brahman realization, they fall down again because they neglect to worship your lotus feet. So they don't actually make a distinction of the Lord and his position and their position. Then they'll fall down from that position. Right? Because why are they in that position is because of the Lord. How will they maintain it is because of the Lord. So if they don't commit this offense, then you see they rise to the highest platform of liberation, which is devotional service. So how rare it is, that we don't fully grasp. So that we're able to, you know, take up devotional service and all. That's very rare. Right? To be, and then to be, you know, in proper line, sampradaya, like this. This is special.
Can we talk about sampradaya? For example, we pursue. What do we sampradaya?
He's Nayard Muni, he's Brahma son, he's our line. He's one of our boys. Yeah. But don't worry, Richard Sru would not be allowed in this society today, so you don't have to worry about that. Good chance Nayard Muni wouldn't be either, right? Daksha would put in a word to the EC and he'd be out. Huh? Yeah, Krishna or Brahma would definitely have a problem. Right? In his purport to verse... Oh, no, we were down here. Text 5. Paraphrasing Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, Srila Prabhupada writes, simply desiring mukti or liberation is insufficient. One must become factually liberated. When one understands the futility of the materialistic way of life, one becomes advanced in knowledge and therefore he situates himself in the vanaprastha order, unattached to family, wife, and children. One should then further progress to the platform sannyas, the actual renounced order, never to fall again and be afflicted by materialistic life. Right? So in other words, coming to the platform where we can work within the material world without attachment to it, that's what we're trying to come to. Right? And then we want to ultimately come to is that it's not just I'm not attached to it, but I'm doing things for Krishna. Not I'm not attached, I do this activity, I give the result to Krishna, but my actually working in detachment is for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? That's sannyas. So whether one comes to sannyas meaning as an order or the sannyas as a consciousness, the point is the consciousness is what you're trying to attain. One takes sannyas, doesn't come to that sannyas mentality. Nice, but the point's been missed. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's be like a businessman without money. Kind of missed the point. You know, so same way. Sannyasa without the mentality of sannyas. It would be, so that's what one's trying to get to. Jnanis, yogis, and karmis devoid of devotional service are called offenders. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Mayavadi Krishne Aparadhi. One who thinks that everything is Maya instead of thinking that everything is Krishna is called an Aparadhi or offender. Although the Mayavadis, impersonalists, are offenders at the lotus feet of Krishna, they may nonetheless be counted amongst the Siddhas, those who have realized the Self. Right? They'll be counted amongst the transcendentalists. And if they're factually liberated, actually liberated, they will be counted on the platform of Anandamaya, but on the lowest platform. They're just on the platform of Anandamaya, but they're not actually functioning in Anandamaya. Right? Only devotees actually function in Anandamaya. Does that make sense? The most are interested in liberation on Vijnanamoy, but don't actually get there. Right? Because it says, out of so many, very rare they ever get there. Right? They may be considered near to spiritual perfection because at least they have realized what spiritual life is. If such a person becomes Narayana Parayana, a devotee of Lord Narayana, he is better than a Jivan Mukta, one who is liberated or perfect. This requires higher intelligence. So someone's liberated, but someone's liberated and a devotee, then they're in a higher position. Does that make sense? So here's people, why we get confused, because here's people who know what liberation is, know they're liberated. While the neophyte devotee, though he's superior to these Jivan Muktas, even though he's liberated, he doesn't know he's liberated. So he still acts as if he's not liberated by habit, by attachment. Right? So as they progress, then you see is that they come to that position. Yes. What does it really mean? But that's called neglect. See, it's English being a derivative of the Germanic language can be a little specific. Not as specific as German, but, you know, a little specific. You know, it's like in German, you'd probably have a word for neglecting your wife on Sunday morning and in the first week of the third month of the year. You know, and that would be a one word, right? You know, but, you know. You understand? So, neglect is not detachment. Because the point is if they do interact, then what happens? Why would they interact? If by neglecting they don't interact, if they did interact, what would they do? Enjoy. They'd be attached. So are they actually detached, what this Shastra is talking about? No. It's just something for guys down at the pub to sit around and think that they're detached. Right? Because amongst the men, they'll think it's great and it's cool and, yeah, you know, show them who's boss and all that kind of jazz. But the reality is detached means you work with it and you don't have the attachment. So if you can work with it and not be attached, then you actually can move into the next order if need be. Does that make sense? The wife would rather spend the time at home. Then she goes home with the kids, and then he takes sannyas. Right? Or they stay together as vanaprastha. whatever works. The point is if you can work with it without attachment, that's detachment. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, one should not take repulsion as detachment. Attraction and repulsion are the same thing. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say, how many stories where the boy or the girl or both don't like each other when they first meet, and then they end up as a couple, right? I remember our temple president, I was in the kitchen and something, and I can't remember, and somebody was telling me that I don't know how it came up, but it was the temple president, he used to cook, and his wife, before they were met, she was also in the kitchen cooking. But somehow or another, they would argue so much that one day he tossed her down the stairs. Right? And, and then they said, sure enough, very short time later, they were married. Because he cared so much that he tossed her down the stairs, not someone else. Right? So romantic. Yeah. So that's the whole point, is this whole idea is that's why it's easy for women to tell who's detached. I'm saying that's why the question comes up, because this question won't come up from this side of the blankets. Because they'll think neglect is detachment. But actually women know it's not detachment, it's just covered attachment. Because like you said, when you interact, and I said, if they do interact, that person who neglects, and then if he does interact, and I said, how do they interact? Instead of saying attachment, you said sense gratification. You understand? So that's the whole point, is that it goes from this neglect to sense gratification, neglect to sense gratification. And then if sense gratification doesn't work, then one's not surrendered, one's not this and that. But then along with that is supposed to come protection and take. No, but we're renounced, so we don't do that. But the women have to do this stuff. So it's a little weird. You understand? But this is because the living entity wants to be the controller and enjoyer. Right? So all these problems come up from that. Right? Because the living entity is not the controller and enjoyer. Because you have to remember, is all living entities are feminine. Then, in the material world, we all have the mentality that I'm the controller and enjoyer, so therefore it's masculine. Then it's divided into some then have the material mechanics to think like a man and some think like a woman. Right? Thinking like a woman, that's pretty straightforward. It's just a matter of whether you want to be a good woman or not. But woman, that will happen. But on the other side, is because it is feminine by nature, then to think like a man actually needs training. Right? Does that make sense? You ever seen, the little girl, she's, by the time she can kind of figure out dressing nicely, that's like when? 2? I've seen before, 3. Okay, let's trade another thing. But just a little, have you never seen like 3-year-olds do all kinds of feminine posturing? You dress them up and they it's like you can just add another, another 12 years and put them on the front of Vogue magazine, they'd be doing the same thing. They just know how to do it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole thing. So that's why the Vedic system has Gurukul, to train boys how to be men. Because otherwise they won't know. Right? So unless they develop that from other men. So previously before they would go out, hunting, they would build a barn, they go to the army, or jobs, they started working at 12. I don't mean a paper route, I mean an actual regular job. So then they would have to learn earlier how to do. But now in the modern society, it's just like, the only thing they have to learn how to be a man is a video game. And so they can, stab somebody, rip the guy's head off, and then chase after the lady who, even Barbie would be embarrassed. She's, so far beyond the femininity that she's got, right? People complain girls don't look like Barbie, you know, but, you know, and then Barbie could say, no one, Barbies don't even look like that was in the video games, right? Yeah. Is that what you said? Yeah? Yes.
Like
it means if they live like vanaprastas. It means they get married and live like, but if they can actually live like vanaprastas, then they can do. As long as both of them are on that platform. They could do it. It's just that there's, you know, there's more attachment than you will remain without. But the basic principle of being, you know, celibate and living simply is there, but they're more comfortable in a kind of a family environment. So if they can do it, nice, but it has to be both parties are into it, not one. But, you know, there are a few like that. But then, you know, nice. But generally you see they do more service and stuff like that. So it'll work. If they can do it. But it's not necessary, but if they can, it works. But it will also be rare. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, the distinction between the two is that one is there's a need for engaging the senses, but it's either you engage out of attachment or you just don't engage. That's all right in the beginning. That's what brahmacharya means. Is that there may be an but you separate yourself, so therefore, then in that environment of being separated from sense gratification, then you learn how to control the senses and everything. Then you, then after graduation, go back into the society, and then one can take part in a detached way in family life and all that, you know, with knowledge and like that. Does that make sense? But otherwise, repulsion doesn't work. It means that's why it's done with brahmacharis. They're not married. Right, so grihastha men shouldn't use that one. Does that make sense? You know. Okay. There are two kinds of jnanis. One is inclined. Okay, so to become a Narayana Parayana, this requires higher intelligence, right? So we're not talking about intelligence that you're smart. We're talking about you have intelligence that is able to understand and distinguish between matter and spirit. There are two kinds of jnanis. One is inclined to devotional service and the other to impersonal realization. Impersonalists generally undergo great endeavor for no tangible benefit. And therefore, it is said that they are husking paddy that has no grain. Stula tusha vaghatinaha. The other class of jnanis, those whose jnana is mixed with bhakti, are also of two kinds. Those who are devoted to the so-called false form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and those who understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Satchitananda Vigraha. Bhakti Rasamrita 5.1. The actual spiritual form. The Mayavadi devotees worship Narayana or Vishnu with the idea that Vishnu has accepted a form of Maya and that the ultimate truth is actually impersonal. The pure devotee, however, thinks that Vishnu has accepted a body of Maya instead. I was thinking that didn't make sense. The pure devotee, however, never thinks that Vishnu has accepted a body of Maya. Instead, he knows perfectly well that the original absolute truth is the Supreme Person. Such a devotee is actually situated in knowledge. He never merges in the Brahman effulgence. Okay, so you have the devotees, and you have the impersonalists, so the jnanis, right? So they're both jnanis in that they have knowledge, right? Difference then being is that the jnanis, then, they're only interested in transcendence, but not in the Lord himself, right? Then of jnanis who are interested in the Lord, then there's those who are interested in the Lord as a temporary form to meditate on, because it's a whole lot easier than meditating on nothing. And then those who actually are interested in the Supreme Lord himself. Right? Does that make sense? So do we see these distinctions? So this is what the Bhagavatam is doing. It's going through and making all, because otherwise we just say, you know, the jnanis, the mayavadis, the impersonalists, we throw them all into one package, which in one sense you can in a generic, but on another sense you have to make distinction. Such a devotee is actually situated in knowledge. He never merges in the Brahman effulgence. Right? He doesn't merge. He may be situated in Brahman, but so is everybody. But he doesn't merge. There's no distinction between Krishna's body and his soul. But because less intelligent men see Krishna as a human being, they deride him. They cannot imagine how a person like Krishna could be the origin of everything. Govindam adi purusham tamahang bhajami. Such persons are described as moghashah, baffled in their hopes. Whatever they desire for the future will be baffled. Even if they apparently engage in devotional service, they are described as moghashah, because they ultimately desire to merge into the Brahman effulgence. Right? So that will be baffled, because you can only do that for a certain amount of time. Those who aspire to be elevated to the heavenly planets by devotional service will also be frustrated, because this is not the result of devotional service. However, they are also given a chance to engage in devotional service and be purified. The difference between the siddhas and Narayana Parayanas is that the direct devotees are called Narayana Parayanas, whereas those who perform various types of mystic yoga are called siddhas. Footnote 15. Note, Srila Jiva Goswami further quotes verse 6.14.5 in his Priti Sandarbha, Bhakti Sandarbha, Bhagavat Sandarbha, and Krishna Sandarbha regarding the rarity of devotional service and the distinction between devotees and impersonalists. So that was all connected with the Act 5. Okay, so we understand like this. Okay. Maharaj Parikit continued. Vritrasura was situated in the blazing fire of battle and was an infamous, sinful demon, always engaged in giving troubles and anxieties to others. How could such a demon become so greatly Krishna conscious? My dear Lord, Sukadeva Goswami, although Vritrasura was a sinful demon, he showed the prowess of an exalted Kshatriya and satisfied Lord Indra in battle. How could such a demon be a great devotee of Lord Krishna? These contradictions have caused me great trouble, and they have made me eager to hear of this from you. Verses 6 to 7. In his purport to verse 6, Srila Prabhupada comments, it has been described that a Narayana Parayana, a pure devotee, is rarely found, even among millions and millions of persons. Therefore, Parikit Maharaj was surprised that Vritrasura, whose purpose was to give trouble and anxiety to others, was one of these devotees, even on the battlefield. What was the reason for Vritrasura's advancement? Because not only did he, you know, because he's a demon, you expect him to just use, like, generally if you have a fight between, let's say Arjuna fights with the demon, okay? It starts off with weapons, right? Then when he defeats his weapons, what does it move into? Trees and all that. When that doesn't work, what does it move? Well, actually, there's something in between the trees. Generally. It can be after, it can be before.
Yeah.
No, no. No, no, no. They start using illusion. No, that's for yajnas. You have to know the place. Right? No. They use illusion. But he's not using any illusion. He's just sticking very clearly to the Kshatriya code. Right? Indra loses weapon, he stops fighting. He's not inspired, he inspires him. Right? Because the whole point is to have a proper fight. So that's why he says he satisfied Indra in battle. Because he was actually a real, proper adversary. Right? So how could he do that? Because basically only, you know, an elevated Kshatriya, so only elevated Kshatriya are generally always devotees. Not extremely pious, but the point is how can such a demon who just is giving trouble to others, mainly the demigods, how can he have these exalted Kshatriya qualities even greater than Indra? And on top of that, he's a pure devotee. Does that make sense? So actually it's because he's a pure devotee, all this other, right? verses 8 to 31, King Chetru aspires to have a son. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, after hearing Maharaj Parikit's very intelligent question, Sukadeva Goswami, the most powerful sage, began answering his disciple with great affection. Verse 8, Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, I shall speak to you the same history I have heard from the mouths of Vyasadeva, Narad, and Devala. Please listen with attention. O King Parikit, in the province of Surasena, there was a king named Chitraketu who ruled the entire earth. During his reign, the earth produced all the necessities of life, so that means he's ruling well, right? He's protecting, and so everything goes very, very nicely. Srila Prabhupada comments, here the most significant statement is that the earth completely produced all the necessities of life during the time of Chitraketu, as stated in the Ishopanishad, Isho Mantra 1, Ishyavasham idam sarvam yatkincha jagat yam jagat, tena tyaktena bhunjita magritha kasyasvidhanam. Every animate or inanimate that is within this universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota. And one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. Krishna, the Supreme Controller, has created the material world, which is completely perfect and free from scarcity. The Lord supplies the necessities of all living entities. These necessities come from the earth, and thus the earth is the source of supply. When there is a good ruler, that source produces the necessities of life abundantly. However, when there is not such a good ruler, there will be scarcity. This is the significance of the word Kamaduk. Elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam 110.4, it is said, Kamam Vavarsha Parajanya Sarva Kama Dugha Mahi. During the reign of Maharaj Yudhishthira, the cloud showered all the water that people needed, and the earth produced all the necessities of men in profusion. Right? So not just here and there, but profusion, like we see something's left over from previous time, is that we see is down at the southern part of Africa, the beaches on the eastern side. There's just diamonds on the beach, right? So how did that come? That's just the earth is just producing, right? And this is what's coming from the ocean. Then there's what's under trees. There's all these different things. So it's just so much. So it's just however much you need, it's there. That makes sense? Everybody performs their duties so that the social system, everything works nicely and all that. People keep engaged. But the point is that for just performing your duty, then there was an abundant supply of everything that one required. We have experienced that in some seasons the rains produce abundance and in other seasons there is scarcity. We have no control over the earth's productiveness. It is naturally under the full control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like I remember when I was a kid, in nutrition books, it was talking about how at that time, and I think these books were from the 50s, that they were talking about how after they started using the chemicals after World War I, when they figured out that urea, you know, because from production of munitions from World War I, could be used as a fertilizer, says that already the nutritional value of, you know, the grains, vegetables, and that was down 11% of what it was before that. And that was just in a very short time. So that's what Prabhupada's pointing out. We don't have control over it. Right? You go against the laws of nature, things go down, the production goes down. You follow the laws, you put your cow dung and deal with the land properly and you deal, then it goes up. In other words, you're pious, it goes up, you're impious, it goes down. Right? So we're not in control. We like to think we are, you know, but hey. By his order, the Lord can make the earth produce sufficient or insufficiently. If a pious king rules the earth according to the Shastric injunctions, there will naturally be regular rainfall and sufficient produce to provide for all men. there will be no question of exploitation, for everyone will have enough. Black marketeering and other corrupt dealings will then automatically stop, right? Because if you have enough, you don't have to do something on the side. If just doing your normal occupation, you get whatever you require. Why do anything outside of that? It's so much trouble, right? If you have one set of books, so easy. Two sets of books, very difficult. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Simply ruling the land cannot solve Mayan's problems unless the leader has spiritual capabilities. He must be like Maharaj Yudhishthira, Parikshit Maharaj, or Ramachandra. Then all the inhabitants of the land will be extremely happy. Right, so we see as Chitraketu was such a king, so therefore we can't say is that, you know, he's got issues. No, he's doing everything, he's doing his duties fine, everything's going perfectly. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued. This Chitraketu had 10 million wives, right? So definitely prosperous, right? Footnote 16. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that the word santanikaha in this verse indicates that this multitude of marriages was for the purpose of producing offspring and not for material enjoyment, right? So by the term used, you can understand he was married for the purpose of producing children, not married for the purpose of sense gratification. Right? So that's the... Yeah. So he doesn't... So the point is, yeah. But although he was capable of producing children, he did not receive a child from any of them. By chance, all the wives were barren. Chitraketu, the husband of these millions of wives, was endowed with a beautiful form, magnanimity and youth. He was born in a high family. He had a complete education, and he was wealthy and opulent. Nevertheless, in spite of being endowed with all these assets, he was full of anxiety because he did not have a son. So he's wealthy and opulent. So generally we would take them as synonyms, but you can have money, but it's not necessarily that you're opulent, right? Because you don't know how to spend, you don't know how to use. You know, let's say, give an example. A lot of times you see in traditional families, you know, generally anywhere in the world, you know, on regular daily affairs, and they're quite careful with their money. But let's say if they're having family or friends over to dinner, or let's say there's a, you know, some special occasion, you know, especially if there's a marriage, then they spend so much money. That's opulence, right? Not wealth. That's opulence. Because so many people with wealth don't have opulence. They don't know how to spend it. Maybe for social things means the way they have a fancy car because it'll be prestigious. But this is not about prestige. This is about using wealth. Right? He was wealthy and he knew how to use it. That's opulence. Right? Does that make sense? Srila Prabhupada comments, it appears that the king first married one wife, but she could not bear a child. Then he married a second, a third, a fourth, and so on. But none of the wives could bear children. In spite of the material assets of Janmaishwarya Sutta Shri, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.26, birth in an aristocratic family with full opulence, wealth, education, and beauty. He was very much aggrieved because in spite of having so many wives, he had no son. Certainly his grief was natural. Just like, just another example. You've seen some, maybe you may have seen around sometimes in Navadvip, rare now, but in Calcutta, some of these older buildings, you know, just the design work on them, very classic. That's opulence. You understand? While you see other buildings, they're very plain. The people that live in them are rich, but there's no opulence. He was very much aggrieved because in spite of having so many wives, he had no son. Certainly his grief was natural. Right? So he wasn't worried that a million wives or 10 million wives, that's a, you know, decent amount of sex. He's worried there's no son. Right? Yes. It appears long enough. Huh? The question is, if he has 10 million wives and he's trying to have children with all of them, how long is this guy alive? Right? I'm not sure, but that's true, because this, well, it doesn't necessarily have to, because it could come at another time. But if you went by chronology, the Vritrasura was at the juncture between Satya and Treta. Right, so definitely a bit more time than we have. Right. I mean, the point is the guy would be dead before he could even marry 10 million wives, let alone try for children. You know, unless you do one of those, you know, what is it? You know, what's it? What's his name? Reverend Moon? I think you ever heard of him? I don't know where he's from. Some are from the Orient. And he'll have a stadium full of people when he does his programs, and they'll have these multiple marriages. That way nobody has to spend money, right? They dress up, but, you know, as far as anything else, it's all the one reception, one everything. They have, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of marriages at once. So unless he was following that, the Prabhupada says starts with one, then two, then maybe it starts picking up, you know? But the point is, it's not about that. It's about just that determination that, you know, he is, his duty as a grihastha is supposed to have a son, and he's not having one, so therefore he's making whatever arrangements are necessary to have one. Right?
Generally, traditionally also, like, if a queen comes, there are other ladies who come, and sometimes they are married to, like, they are, like, almost considered married to the king.
Oh, you mean the maid servants? That's also a possibility. But I would expect, because the maidservants, though they have the relationship with the king as like wife, but, or let's not say like wife, but the conjugal relationship, their son wouldn't be the one to sit on the throne. So you get the idea here, it's actually 10 million queens. So then maidservants, you throw in a few more, right? But the point is they were not interested. He wasn't about sense gratification, so therefore we don't get the idea he's spending time with these maidservants. Okay. Okay. He was very much aggrieved because in spite of having so many wives, he had no son. Certainly his grief was natural. Grihastha life does not mean having a wife and no children. Chanakya Pandit says, Putrahinam griha shunyam. If a family man has no son, his home is no better than a desert. The king was certainly most unhappy that he could not get a son, and this is why he had married so many times. Kshatriyas especially are allowed to marry more than one wife, and this king did so. Nonetheless, he had no issue. Does that make sense? So the point is grihastha means that one has children. So if one doesn't want to have children, then that means you get married and immediately are vanaprastha. Does that make sense? So that would mean then if there's no going to be children, then one also reduces everything down and keeps it really simple, right? Does that make sense? So it's not that, oh, one goes for all the money and facility and all that, but doesn't have children. No, all the money and facility goes along with the children. They're not doing the children, then keep it simple. You know, get a few nice things, keep it simple, be engaged in direct devotional service. Make sense? Yeah. But most won't do that, so therefore, that's why the question comes up. Because they won't live as vanaprasthas, they won't live as grihasthas. So then, hard to say. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, his queens all had beautiful faces and attractive eyes, yet neither his opulences, his hundreds and thousands of queens, nor the land of which he was the supreme proprietor were sources of happiness. Right, so it's not that he wasn't attractive, that's why he didn't have children. Right? You know, you hear about that sometimes that husband's not attracted to the wife, there's no children. Right? The wife's not attracted to the husband, there's no children. But it's already mentioned that he is very, very good birth, good qualities, youthfulness, you know, beauty, like this. So it's not that he's not attractive. And it mentions here that the had beautiful faces and attractive eyes. So that means they're going to be attractive, right? Because that's the first face of Kandarpa, right? Is the face, the eyes. Because that's going to be the start. From there, then it goes, moves on. Right? Does that make sense? So the whole point is, therefore, there's nothing there. There wasn't a problem with them. Not that they all had, you know, they needed to go down to the fertility clinic and get checked up. Like that. It's just they're not having children. Yes.
They don't used to do the charts.
So devotees generally do the charts, and one of the things they really check for is if they're going to have children or not. Yeah? It's nice. I'm saying it's good. Most I haven't heard check that one. Most don't even know why they're checking it, just because they're supposed to. You know, and then you have the ones that, why should we check it? We're devotees. You know, so. Yeah, I can't say. I've never really heard anybody talk about it. So the point is, where will we go with this? Can we confirm whether he checked or not? So therefore, all we do is get ourselves, you know, grumpy about did he have, did he not, this and that, you understand? So the point is, they're all supposed to be able to have children, but they're not having any children. That's the point, is there somehow or another. Okay. Yes. Yes, yes. So then it's a problem. Like as it mentioned, it's a natural problem because grihasala means they'll have children and all this. Like that. Once upon a time, when the powerful sage named Angira was traveling all over the universe without engagement, by his sweet will, he came to the palace of King Chitraketu. It means he didn't have something specific. He has nothing specific he has to do except for be absorbed in, you know, transcendence. So, you know, he didn't have a specific thing he was invited for. No king was asking him to come. So he's just passing by. So he just dropped in. Chitraketu immediately stood up from his throne and offered him worship. He offered drinking water and eatables, and in this way performed his duty as a host to a great guest. When the Rishi was seated very comfortably, the king, restraining his mind and senses, sat on the ground at the side of the Rishi's feet. Because that's the one thing, when you come before the spiritual master, you're supposed to restrain the senses and the mind so that it just functions properly, you're focused, you like this. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, how do you take advantage? Because if the mind's distracted, you can't take advantage of what's being discussed, the association. O King Parikit, when Chitraketu bent low in humility, was seated at the lotus feet of the sage congratulated him for his humility and hospitality, right? He's king of the world. He's got 10 million wives. You know what I'm saying? It's like the guy that's got the, you know, the arm candy, you know, like that. His ego is really big. You know what I'm saying? This guy's got 10 million, you know, and that, he, you know, he's able to come, he's king of the world, he comes very nicely, offers his respects, you know, does the whole thing, gives them, you know, some water, he receives them properly, gives them things to eat, he, you know, does everything properly, right? The sage addressed him in the following words, 13 to 16. The great sage Angira said, "My dear king, I hope that your body and mind and your royal associates and paraphernalia are well." Right? So that means him, you know, body and mind. So that's, you know, the gross and subtle body. His associates, because he, you know, as a king, you have to have associates. You can't run a kingdom on your own. Right? You know, unless it's a video game. Then you basically do it alone. But if it's not a video game, you have to have associates. Right? So then, and then it also mentioned his paraphernalia, because then to do those So he's going to perform his kingly duties with his associates, and how are they going to do that with paraphernalia? Does that make sense? Okay. So therefore, these three go together. When the seven properties of material nature, the total material energy, the ego, and the five objects of sense gratification. Total material energy means all the aspects, you can say, of the primary creation, right? All the different things there. The ego is how you're going to identify it with it, and then the five objects of sense gratification means the field now you'll interact with. Right? The living entity within the material elements is happy. Without these seven elements, one cannot exist. Similarly, a king is always protected by seven elements. His instructor, Swami, a guru, his ministers, his kingdom, his fort, his treasury, his royal order, and his friends. Remember that these means all the different things that were discussed in Manu, that the kingdom means it has these seven limbs. So he has to maintain all of these. He can't think, well, I'll just do it all on my own. Does that make sense? Like that. So as it goes back, then it each one goes back from the other. Srila Prabhupada writes, as is quoted by Srila Sridhar Swami in his Bhagavatam commentary, Swam Amat Yau Janapada Durga Dravina Sanchayaha Dando Mitra Cha Tas Yaita Sapta Prakritayo Mataha. A king is not alone. He first has his spiritual master, the supreme guide. Then come his ministers, his kingdom, his fortifications, his treasury, his system of law and order, and his friends or allies. If these seven are properly maintained, the king is happy. Similarly, as explained in Bhagavad Gita, Dehi no smin yata dehe. Bhagavad Gita 2.13. The living entity, the soul, is within the material covering of the Mahatattva, ego, and pancha tanmatra, the five objects of sense gratification. When these seven are in proper order, the living entity is in the mood of pleasure, right? So as the living entity, he has to have all those in order, right? And so then, as specifically as duties of a kshatriya, then there's these seven limbs. Right? Does that make sense? Decent range. What happened? Generally, when the associates of the king are quiet and obedient, the king can be happy. Therefore, the great sage Angira Rishi inquired about the king's personal health and the good fortune of his seven associates. When we inquire from a friend whether everything is well, we are concerned not only with his personal self, but also with his family, his source of income, and his associates or servants. All of them must be well, and then a person can be happy. So these are practical, what one looks for. This is how one arranges. Right? Does that make sense? These are properly in order, things work. They're not in order, things don't work. Angira Rishi continued, O King, O Lord of humanity, when a king directly depends upon his associates and follows their instructions, he is happy. Similarly, when his associates offer their gifts and activities to the king and follows his orders, they are also happy. Right? So this other thing of being connected to others, the relationship. That's what actually makes it work. So when he listens to his ministers and his authorities and those who are dependent upon him, then they give proper, you know, gifts, and that they follow his order, then everything works very nicely. Srila Prabhupada instructs, the actual happiness of a king and his dependents is described in this verse. A king should not simply give orders to his dependents because he is the supreme. Sometimes he must follow their instructions. Similarly, the dependent should depend on the king. This mutual dependence will make everyone happy, right? That's a relationship. So that means that it applies to anything that's there. Somebody who has leadership in something, he has dependents. So generally, he's giving direction, they're following, they're interacting nice, but also sometimes he's listening to what they have to say because they're the ones that are doing it. Does that make sense? So a leader who can do that, that works properly. Everyone's happy. The leader that just comes in, says this, 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 and goes away, there is no one in the three worlds that is happy with such a person. There isn't one living entity like that. So this is the standard. That's the whole point. When Bhagavatam gives all these different things, this is the gold standard. You can say, oh, but we can't follow all that. It says, why can't we follow that? This is the whole point. This is the disease. The disease is it doesn't match what I think, therefore I can't follow it. So yes, you can say, I can't follow this. It means you. Yes, you can't follow it. Not that it can't be done. That's the next thing. You know, it's Kali Yuga, we can't do these things. That's the next thing. But actually, no, only you can't do it. Others can do it. Right? Does that make sense? So this is... Angira Rishi continued, O king, are your wives, citizens, secretaries, and servants, and the merchants who sell spices and oil under your control? Are you also in full control of ministers, the inhabitants of your palace, your providential governors, your sons, and your other dependents? Footnote 17. Srila Prabhupada comments, the master king and his subordinates should be interdependent, though through cooperation both of them can be happy. So these two have to go together. So he has to have that control, so they're dependent. But at the same time, as he's dependent upon them. He follows their directions. He sees that everything is going nicely. Right? Their satisfaction is his satisfaction. If the king's mind is fully controlled, all his family members and governmental officers are subordinate to him. Right? So if you control your mind, others are subordinate. You don't control your mind, no one's subordinate. His provincial governors present taxes on time without resistance. What to speak of lesser servants? O King Chitraketu, I can observe that your mind is not pleased. You seem not to have achieved your desired goal. Is this because of you yourself, or has it been caused by others? Your pale face reflects your deep anxiety. Right, so if the king is peaceful and all that, then all these things are in place. Right, because they're all in place, he's peaceful, he's being with a focused mind, he can get all these things in place. So now having said all that, now there's a doubt because he's not looking satisfied. So does this mean all these other things are not in place? And if not, what is that? Is that caused by himself? Is that caused by others? Certainly so. 19-21. Srila Prabhupada comments, since the face is the index to the mind, a saintly person can study the condition of one's mind by seeing his face. When Angira Rishi remarked about the king's discolored face, King Chitraketu explained the cause of his anxiety as follows. You have a question?
What does it mean to control the mind? That be a condition?
Control, but what do you mean by what do you mean? What's the doubt? Means, how would you define it? And so therefore, now what's the doubt?
Somebody
controlling
the mind is always absorbed in Krishna.
In Krishna or in their duties or, you know, in other words, what's supposed to be done, they're focused on that. The mind's engaged there, not thinking of something else. You know, and it's also in the proper state of what it should be. You're dealing in a particular environment, the particular moods or particular qualities that are recommended are what are being used. Does that make sense? Is that okay? See, you ask an exact question, you get an exact answer. Right? If I had started off with previously, that would have been 15 minutes of going around and around in circles on issues. You understand? That's why exact question gets a very exact answer. And then we're actually satisfied. Sukadeva Goswami said, O King Parikshit, although the great sage Angira knew everything, he inquired from the king in this way, right? Because then you feel you said, because the point is being here, is somebody's in anxiety, then you hear from them, right? Like that. Rather than you know and you just tell, because then people somehow know they're not satisfied. Even though he could just tell them, people don't think you don't know or don't care or things like that. Does that make sense? Thus King Chittaketu, desiring a son, bent low in great humility and spoke to the great sage as follows. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Vikalpitaha means being made the subject in various ways. Though the sage knew the cause, he wanted to hear of the king's grief from his own mouth. King Chittaketu said, O great Lord Angira, because of austerity, knowledge, and transcendental samadhi, you are freed from all the reactions of sinful life. Therefore, as a perfect yogi, you can understand everything external and internal regarding embodied, conditioned souls like us. O great soul, you are aware of everything, yet you are asking me why I am full of anxiety. Therefore, in response to your order, let me disclose the cause. Right. So in other words, he's asked, so he takes it as this is the direction, so now he gives the example. Right. So he's following the order. As a person aggrieved by hunger and thirst is not pleased by the external gratification of flower garlands or sandalwood pulp, I am not pleased with my empire, opulence, or possessions, which are desirable even for great demigods, because I have no son. Therefore, O great sage, please save me and my forefathers, who are descending to the darkness of hell, because I have no progeny. Kindly do something so that I may have a son to deliver us from hellish conditions. Srila Prabhupada comments. According to Vedic civilization, one gets married simply to have a son, who is needed to offer oblations to his forefathers. King Chittaketu responsibly desired to beget a son so that he and his forefathers might be delivered from the darkest regions. He was concerned with how to get pinda, oblations in the next life, not only for himself but also for his forefathers. Therefore, he requested Angira Rishi to favor him by doing something that could help him get a son. Right? So they're responsible in Grihastha life, the line carries on. Right? Devotees, then this aspect is not so important. Then it's just a matter of family life, that this is that, you know, why people are getting involved in it. Right? But otherwise, you're dealing with, I'm in a family, I've gotten benefit from that family, so therefore I have to give something back to the family by continuing the family. Does that make sense? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini ki.